This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. We all need to eat, but for some, access to food is only getting harder. About a decade ago, 38,000 Chicago residents lived more than a mile from a supermarket or superstore. And last year, that number jumped to 102,000 residents, according to a WBEZ and Sun Times analysis. A wave of grocery store closures last year on the South and West Sides prompted Mayor Johnson to propose a city-owned grocery store as one solution, an idea that's been floated before by some advocates. Meanwhile, community members have been building creative models to more immediately address the issue. So I sat down with a panel of folks to discuss how to approach food justice from different angles. Liz Abuna is the owner and operator of 40 Acres Fresh Market, a pop-up grocer on its way to opening a brick and mortar on Chicago's West Side. Dion Dawson is the founder of Dion's Chicago Dream, which delivers fresh produce to 1,700 households a week. And Erica Allen is the CEO of Urban Growers Collective, which operates 8 urban farms predominantly on Chicago's South Side. I started off by asking Liz to help us define what food justice is and how it differs from the term food desert.
The reason I don't like the term food desert is because it's a benign term. It's passive and it doesn't take into account the why of how neighborhoods, how communities get left with no control over their food supply, get left with an unhealthy food supply, and a dearth of options that could and would be healthier. And it doesn't speak to those structural forces, those historic events that have led to the conditions that we're at. It's like, oh, this is just the way it is. Like, it's a naturally occurring state that some neighborhoods will have food and others won't. So I just feel as though there's no accountability in the words food desert.
Erica, what are your thoughts on food justice and what that means?
I absolutely agree. I mean, I think the terminology frames the conversation. So if we say food desert, it paints a picture, right, in our mind's eye, when we are really talking about intentional lack of investment that impacts the health, the wealth, the safety of our communities. And this is something that's been happening, you know, post, you know, antebellum. I mean, we really can take it all the way back. So if we're talking from a repair or reparational perspective, we're not only talking about placing grocery stores, placing assets in the community, we're making sure that those assets are circular in their economics, circular in an environmental fashion, and that the people who've been most impacted by social inequity, historic social inequity and injustice, are the beneficiaries both of the most delicious food that we can possibly, you know, bring into our communities, the most nutritionally dense, with the information, with the cultures being reattached to our food pathways. Those are all things that, you know, the three of us do in the community of practice that is very, very, very deep in Chicago is working on. There is not a one-size-fits-all, but we need to put it within terms of geopolitical understanding of our economic system and looking at food apartheid. And apartheid is such a great, I really like that, because it really draws into the complicity of the state and the state in general, so not our state, but just the state and how our public resources can be used to rectify these things.
Dion, what do you see as the biggest challenge facing Chicago when it comes to food justice?
I mean, there's a host of them. I think that, you know, of course, when we think about food justice? What's our true north? You know, what are we setting out to accomplish? Because I think, you know, when we see what our motivations are and what the destination is, I think then we'll be able to always have our actions lead to that thing. And, you know, one of the things that bind, you know, the three of us as well as a lot of, there's a host of a lot of amazing people and leaders and orgs doing a lot of great work. And we, you know, even when we were in conversation in the back, you know, really just making sure that there's this accountability to getting it right. And when we talk about justice, it's, you know, what do we feel is the right way to, you know, meet this moment and deliver in this moment? And, you know, one of the biggest things would really be, you know, understanding that the system that was set up was not meant to be something that was successful for us. You know, especially when you're talking about Black actors and growers mm-hmm. and distributors. And so making sure that, you know, we're not looking at, you know, a new type of problem through an old type of lens. And just from that alone, you know, being able to say, okay, you know what? You know, it's about feeding people. Mm-hmm. It's about people getting, you know, the freshest, you know, amazing, beautiful food possible. And how can we, you know, have it readily available and accessible to them in ways that does not devalue everything that was putting to getting it to them?
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, right now, amongst a lot of other things, making sure that there's no private and personal ego involved and making sure that we're holding ourselves accountable to the people and the systems that we want to build. And I think that, you know, making sure that we know what right is and what right looks like, and we know it's going to change. You know, if we learned anything about the pandemic, we know that we don't know everything, but understanding that, you know, there's a certain accountability and a certain communication that's necessary to always meet this need that is needed daily.
Yeah.
Food is necessary for life.
For and all so, of us.
Exactly.
For
exactly.
All of us. So. Yeah. You mentioned growers there, Erica. I want to get to the source, farms. How can urban farms connect people to food production?
I mean, it just empowers people to see food growing in our own communities. I mean, urban agriculture is about predominantly making sure that food is accessible, that people generationally know how to grow food, can see it growing on the block in the community, can see it showing up in our lives, and it's not some abstract. When you have young people who, when you ask, where does this carrot come from? And they say, on a styrofoam, you know, from the grocery store, have no idea where food actually that comes, grows in the earth or mm-hmm. grows in a vertical farm operation. That's a national security issue, that we literally don't have control of our food, that our generations don't know where their food's coming from.
Yeah.
So creating a food system in our communities, creating economic opportunities, making sure people are healthy and have their basic human needs met is just the foundation of civilization, period. So urban ag is that entry point. It creates a pathway so that folks can go into food businesses. We are inspiring the next generation. I have four generations behind me in the 23 years I've been doing this work consistently in Chicago, let alone growing up farming. And to have four generations now, the children of the children that I started with in the programs, and not necessarily becoming growers, but becoming mm-hmm. food literate, you know, supporting and understanding where food comes from, creates an entirely different mindset mm-hmm. around our relationship to each other, the environment, and just as early stage entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
Liz, you run a mobile market. Tell us how that model works.
That's a great question. So one, I think that what's important to remember about me is that my goal has always been to open a brick and mortar grocery store. Mm-hmm. The reason I started with mobile is because I didn't know what I was doing. So it was a flexible way to learn the industry. And that has shifted and iterated over time. Mm-hmm. When we first started, it was pop-up markets. And that was going into existing neighborhood spaces and then transforming them into a produce market for maybe a day. Then it became delivery. So actually having people order online and us delivering it to their homes. Then it became, because we were doing the pop-up markets on the west side, the city came to us and said, hey, we have a city market in Austin. You're working in Austin. Mm-hmm. Can 40 acres take over the management of this city market in Austin? And what can you do with that, with the model that you're working?
So what do you hope a brick and mortar grocery location will do for your business and community?
So I think that when we talk about, I want to back up, because oftentimes we're talking about so many different issues at one time.
Yes.
when we're talking partially about food insecurity, and that's really, there's more month at the end of the money when it comes to buying food. I may not know how I'm going to get my next meal. There is food access, meaning I might have the money, but mm-hmm. I don't have the access. Mm-hmm. And then there is retail, which kind of combines the two, but also has an economic and commercial aspect, but also an infrastructure aspect to it. I was very, very into the infrastructure of building a store. You cannot say that a neighborhood is no longer living in with food apartheid mm-hmm. if all of the infrastructure is unhealthy food that they can get at any time. They can go to McDonald's at any time. They can go to the corner store at any time. Mm-hmm. But there's no infrastructure for which to do those same economic activities that at least offers healthier options.
Right.
So I wanted to plant my flag in the commercial infrastructure of a community.
Yeah.
Now, what does that do for my business? Grocery is a volume business. There's no way around it. Like, you have to sell a lot of groceries to make anything viable or sustainable mm-hmm. work.
Yeah.
And so in order to sell a lot of volume, you need space. You can't do it through a mobile market. It's just the capacity is not there.
Yeah.
So
brick and mortar is definitely the way to go.
Brick and mortar is what gives you the capacity, the holding power mm-hmm. so that you can move volume.
Mm-hmm. How does your delivery service fit into this, Dion?
Well, I think the beautiful thing about how we've, you know, tried to connect, because when we talk about the food system, I think, you know, Erica hit it right on the head with, there's not a universal understanding or acceptance of what our food system is. And, you know, to have that lack of codification allows a lot of things to happen without anyone really, you know, taking responsibility for it. And so the good thing about what we've done with our delivery is it's always about being nimble and flexible, but to ultimately connect the food system. And the thing that I love about, you know, what we're doing here in Chicago, which is, you know, I think, with everything that I know, we're leagues ahead of so many options, but we still have to work to connect them. And so with what Dion Chicago Dream is about is we're logistics and delivery. And so, you know, right now we're sourcing and all of our, we're making sure that we're purchasing to have that purchase power. So now we have to continue, because if we're not totally connected to Liz and we're not totally connected to Erica and we're not totally connected to all of the other, you know, growers and players, then we're not doing it the right way. And we're overworking and we're underutilizing all of the assets that we have. And so with our dream deliveries, it's really ultimately about connecting so that everyone can have that access and they can have that quality, but also we're making sure that we've done it with a business in a way that, you know, UGC can get paid what they're supposed to get paid mm-hmm. and Liz and 40 Acres can have their support and Dion Chicago Dream can have our fleet of vehicles and delivery crews who are out there connecting everything together.
So here's the thing. I mean, alongside providing food, there are jobs, right? How do we also provide job opportunities in this work, Erica?
I mean, I think this is exactly, we were talking about this earlier, like, I don't need to do logistics, you know, I'm a she, her, hers, we, us girl. So the entities that I'm part of, I'm always looking at innovation. Now that the field has widened, there's opportunities. We don't deliver our community-supported agriculture box or subscription box. Dion does. We co-branded a box a year ago. And then we're moving into, with our mobile market, Fresh Moves, into looking at that really being a mobile farmer's market and less everything all the time, just a really limited amount of wholesale, non-seasonal items that our communities need, and being able to create opportunities at those communities' sites for employment so that we're not hiring more people as an entity. We're hiring from the community, mm-hmm. in the community. So I can walk over once a week, work for 4 hours, and walk away not only, you know, supporting my neighbors, having food access, that I know once it gets cold that I'm going to get the same quality produce being delivered by Dion or being delivered by 40 Acres.
Absolutely.
You know, and hopefully a collab with all of us. And we weren't able to do this a few years ago. When I started this work, there were not a lot of people of color in this work, and there was not an understanding of how serious our food security issues were.
Yeah.
You know, and so the fact that we can actually have these conversations, that Liz can put in the extra amount of energy and time and figure out these impossible margins to have a brick and mortar that I can lean into Dion and his brilliance and his logistics mastery, or I don't have to do that. I trust this team of folks.
Yeah.
We are a team out here in this ecosystem that I can lean into Anton Seals and the work that he's leading in Englewood. And that crosses all kinds of economic opportunities. That's also centered around food. So we're in this really pivotal space. And I'll say it as the OG doing this work, that we can begin having more robust conversations that actually lean into community wealth building mm-hmm. through a food lens. Because if we don't have food, we don't have a society that functions.
Absolutely.
Liz, I mentioned earlier how Chicago's exploring that possibility of a city-owned grocery store. Your thoughts?
The political will to at least address the issue of food apartheid is applaudable. I applaud that. I think that when it comes to public goods as a business, it makes sense in certain realms, like our airports, because that level of infrastructure is so great and so expensive, and you're talking about needing the FAA involved, that it makes sense for government to have control of that. It makes sense in terms of public transportation. I think that there are avenues to supporting food retail in the communities that need it most that rather support the efforts that are currently going on mm-hmm. rather than trying to reinvent the wheel for government to stay in there. And I get why they want to do it, because everybody talks about market forces this, market forces that, supply and demand, blah, 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 which is BS. But anyway, because the market is influenced by what we choose to care about as a society. Now, I get that you don't want stores just closing when there's just not enough profit there for them. And I'm not even talking about no profit or they're losing money. Businesses will close profitable stores because they're not profitable enough.
Yeah.
So they don't want to be left to the whims of that. But I'm also concerned about the city only focusing on the supply side and wanting to build infrastructure where we haven't been able to prove that we can drive the demand to that infrastructure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, Dion, sum it up for us then. What can the city learn from local leaders in the food justice space?
We have to want to learn. You know what I mean? I think the thing about what we're doing and how I've tried to position myself is, you know, I've never stopped learning. You know what I mean? We're already, you know, experiencing, but we're also always learning in terms of what, you know, the city can do. You know, Anton Seals said it best yesterday. He said, we are the city. Sure. And I think that there's this understanding. When he said it, it hit me in the chest because, you know, as a social enterprise leader or as someone in food, we look at the city as on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
Instead of being us. And so when we look at it from, you know, us being the city, it's really about, you know, we're always going to learn. It's just whether or not you will accept it and apply those learnings. But in terms of grocery, it's understanding, you know, how it was built, who it was meant to help and feed and build wealth for.
Yeah.
And then making sure, which is something that's big for me, which is making sure that the last 4 years of loss was not in vain.
Yeah.
We learned a lot about a safety net that we did not have and resources that we did not have ready. What we as the city and as its inhabitants and residents and recipients can learn is understanding that we just learned a harsh lesson that I don't want us to learn again. A
few seconds left, Erica. I want you to bring us home here. Final thoughts. I mean, you've even talked about how important it is to not romanticize the work that you're doing.
Yeah, I think that the city has a great opportunity with the Food Equity Council, with the folks that are already coalescing, doing the work, to invest in existing models. Mm-hmm. The city should be a partner. We are partners to each other. The city should mimic what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I applaud we're all pausing because we have colleagues and just amazing champions on all sides of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Food business is hard. It is not, it is hard for corporations to do it. So like the idea that the city, which, you know, government is good at what government does and not necessarily running businesses, it's an odd proposition. And I think all of us on this side of the doing of the implementation know that it's not a good idea for the city to run a grocery store. It's a great idea for the city to be an active subsidizing partner in efforts like Liz, like efforts like Go Green on Racine, like efforts like that are emerging, that there's not enough capital or resources.
So working together.
Yeah. And that's investing in our neighborhoods. That's investing in the entrepreneurs that have the passion. It's investing in the mom and pop operations that can just be robust, you know, oases within our communities of fresh produce. That the urban ag, you asked me earlier about urban ag. I mean, urban ag suppliers to the corner grocery store that is, you know, co-branded, that is modeling these innovative bootstrap projects that we've all had to scrape together infrastructure and investment money. Like, the city could do that.
We've got to leave it there. We've been speaking with Erica Allen, Dion Dawson, and Liz Abuna. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubbers, edited and mixed by Linnea Dominic. On Reset, we bring together panels of changemakers in Chicago and talk through solutions to complex issues. If you're interested in more conversations like this, please consider leaving us a rating. It helps more people find us. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.